nuestro territorio nacional.
También Radio Pacífica ha reportado desde los años 80 sobre el turbio mundo del narcotráfico y su persistente influencia en agencias de gobierno. Escuchemos un fragmento de una entrevista exclusiva con Celerino Castillo III, ex empleado de la DEA, la Policía Antinarcóticos Norteamericana.
La verdad que Calderón, el que lo apoyó a él, fue el Chapo Guzmán. Entonces el Chapo Guzmán ya ganó todo lo que le dicen la plaza. La plaza es toda la frontera de México con los Estados Unidos. Él dio millones y millones de dólares a Calderón para las elecciones. El Chapo Guzmán, entonces lo que hizo cuando ganó Calderón, le rentó Calderón a él, el ejército mexicano. Entonces se dejaron venir y este Chapo Guzmán comenzó a usar el ejército a tumbar toda la gente de Ociel Cárdenas, el cartel del Golfo y los demás carteles.
Celerino Castillo realizó operaciones encubiertas en Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador y Belice.
Ya estaban ellos, ya estaban trabajando, la DEA también. Por ejemplo, nosotros estábamos echándole combustibles a los avionetas que venían de Colombia cargados de coca. De cocaína, ¿verdad? Entonces el otro agente, el agente de la DEA que se llamaba Russell Reina, él decía que se iba a decomisar el cargamento del avión ese llegando a los Estados Unidos. Y después de 5 o 6 avionetas que estábamos llenando de combustible nosotros bajo cubierto, pues los avionetas nunca lo estaban agarrando. El problema que decía el señor Reina que pues que habían cambiado plan de vuelo ya yendo para los Estados Unidos, y la verdad eran los cargamentos de los contras que estaban llevando coca para los Estados Unidos para rebusar de sus dineros para los para trabajar bajo cubierto con para darles dinero a los contras, ¿verdad?
¿Y qué hacía Luis Posada Carriles en ese momento?
Ah, sí, ya estaba Posada Carriles en 88, ya estaba ahí sentado trabajando en Ilopango. Él le estaba ayudando a Félix Rodríguez y a Albert North. Y la razón que nosotros sabemos eso es porque nosotros teníamos una fuente ahí en Ilopango y los avisaba de los cargamentos que entraban y salían, ¿verdad? Entonces nosotros ya sabíamos que estaba ahí este Luis Posadas y que él se había escapado. Todo el mundo sabía. El embajador sabía todo, la CIA. Jack McCabe, que era el jefe de la estación del Cuba Stations ahí en El Salvador, sabía que y se habían traído, dio permiso que usáramos a Luis Posadas para trabajar en el Ilopango con Félix Rodríguez y con Oliver North.
¿Cuál era la función de Posada Carriles en ese momento?
Bueno, Posada estaba encargado de pagarle a todos los pilotos de los contras que estaban llegando a Ilopango. Y toda la gente que estaba trabajando, como por ejemplo todos los nicaragüenses que estaban trabajando bajo cubierto, trabajaban, hacían sus operativos en Nicaragua y se venían a Ilopango. Entonces Luis Posadas los ponía en safe houses, casas de seguridad donde podían vivir ellos y hacer los planes de trabajo. Ahí fueron, hicieron el plan de trabajo. Me acuerdo el plan que hicieron que era para poner las minas en los harbors de Nicaragua. Bueno, miren, la cosa más importante de todo, que yo cuando estuve en Vietnam fue cuando yo vi un amigo mío que se estaba chuleando heroin y se murió. Y yo me prometí que si yo salía de eso, yo iba a ser un agente del DEA. Y sí lo hice porque yo puse mi vida en peligro por 6 años en América Latina pensando que si yo hacía algo positivo, valía la pena de mi muerte, como lo hizo Quique Camarena. Entonces lo que resultó fue que por la primera vez me dio vergüenza ser americano, porque fue cuando la primera vez me di cuenta que los Estados Unidos no nomás están envueltos en el tráfico de droga con los carteles, pero estaban entrenando los escuadrones de la muerte en Latinoamérica. Entonces el foreign policy que teníamos nosotros del Departamento del Estado no funcionaba, era pura mentira, no había democracia en Latinoamérica, había lo que nosotros le llamábamos cocaine democracy, que nosotros dejábamos los países esos de Latinoamérica que dormían con los carteles y ese era el precio de ellos y por eso se nombraron democracias de cocaína.
Era Celerino Castillo, ex empleado de la DEA, la Policía Antinarcóticos Norteamericana, y autor del libro Powder Burns, Quemadas de Pólvora. Aquí concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de RTN, de Telesur, de Radio de Naciones Unidas, del Informativo Farco, de Hispan TV y del diario La Jornada. A nombre de Norma Martínez se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Hi, this is Uncle Dennis, producer of the Earth First Update, wanting to invite you to tune in to Free Radio Santa Cruz on Friday afternoons from 1 to 4:30, where we present environmental programs from around the world. Starting off at 1 o'clock with Radio EcoShock, we visit the world of changing climate. And at 2 o'clock, we go to Costing of the Earth from the BBC 4. At 2:30, we present Eco News, a report from the North Coast Environmental Center produced at KHSU in Arcata, California. At 3 o'clock is the Earth First Update, produced by yours truly, bringing you all the environmental news you need to know. At 3:30, we present Terra Verde, produced at the studios of KPFA in Berkeley, California. And at 4 o'clock, Sea Change Radio. I'd like to invite you to tune in to any of all of these programs right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org.
Hi, this is Peter Bergman of the Firesign Theater, and if there's one thing I really like, it's honest, authentic radio made by real people, not by some cookie-cutter corporation. So whenever I'm in California, I listen to RDUCKSHOWFRSC.
Coming up next on the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz at freakradio.org, we have the Thursday, November 15th, Bathrobes Pierre's Broadside Show, pre-recorded as ever, but this one recorded a little earlier because on the 15th, which I'll be calling today, though it's actually being recorded the day before, on November 14th, we're going to be at a rally, what I call a Camp Quest rally, a community survival campground rally, because of the city's, not just its failure to find winter shelter for folks, but its active destruction of promised winter shelter and its betrayal of promises to address, well, at least for one small group of people, the 40 to 60 people at the River Street Campground, what I call the Boneyard Barbed Wire Campground, which begins evacuating tomorrow, that is November 16th, from the point of view of you, the listeners to this broadcast. We'll be meeting at the post office even as this broadcast is happening, or I should say this stream is happening. This program is being aired on the stream. And you're invited to come on down. It's going to be, there'll be food, there'll be music, there'll be speeches. People from out of town will be coming. Paul Bowden from the Western Regional Advocacy Project. I believe Anthony Prince, an activist who's representing homeless people in Marysville and has challenged the Salinas anti-homeless laws. We'll have local speakers. It's possible that some of the city council candidates, not clear if they've won or not, who on the more liberal side of the roster will be there, as well as lots of folks who are losing their or afraid of losing their property, their tents, their security, their health, and so forth, because of the confusion around what the police and Parks and Rec Rangers are doing. And you're going to be playing some interviews with folks about that issue that came up at the HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting that happened on Wednesday the 14th, as well as some chatter from the Santa Cruz City Council, or City Council as they like to call themselves. They're, of course, the council that allows folks outside to, I don't want to say drown in shit, maybe wade through shit or secretly go out to the bushes to take a shit by locking away bathrooms, having no 24-hour brick-and-mortar bathrooms open in Santa Cruz, and having only very limited facilities, three porta potties, in essence, available at night in the city of Santa Cruz, as well as a growing anti-homeless lock away the bathrooms, lock away the parks in San Lorenzo Park, Star of the Sea Park, Loudon Nelson Park, Grant Avenue Park, just a series of treatment of homeless people as creatures, kind of a nasty, keep the rats away sort of thing, or as some bigots on the Santa Cruz Sentinel website call them, the filth. Anyway, you're going to be hearing lots of stuff that kind of bears on the campground issue, as well as life outside, and a couple of interviews, too. Going to go up to Eugene and hear what's happening in Eugene, Oregon, from Dangerous John T., who's been up there for some years and is struggling with repression. We'll be giving us a report from there. And who knows what else. So don't go away. And when you get tired of listening to this, come on down to, well, check out the post office. And if you don't find us there, go to City Hall, where there's a planning commission meeting. And we might have Keith McHenry on the line shortly to talk about that. So let's get into it.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
Okay, I'm on the line with Dangerous John Teal King, as I call my old associate, who's been an activist in and around Santa Cruz for quite a while before he was forced out of the town by rents, or who knows what else. Hi, John.
Hello. And I should also point out we were used to be roommates, too. Full disclosure.
Oh, yes. You're, well, you know, that was a sacred trust, and you were able to, you endured that one for quite a while.
Yeah.
So you called me earlier today because things are happening up north, which you thought might be of interest to folks down here.
Yeah. I'm seeing a general atmosphere, including my own feelings about my own protests, of feeling like things are being more repressive towards the homeless people. At the same time, the Ninth Circuit Court did the basically in Boise, they made the decision that people have a right to sleep on the street, at least on public property. If there's no available shelter beds available, they have that right under the Boise decision. But lately, the Lane County and the City of Eugene Police Department have been kind of stepping back against that decision, basically. I should go over some of the history of the last several weeks. There's this lot called the Butterfly Lot, which is right across the street from Wayne Moore Species Plaza, what is currently being used as a meeting place for the City Council and the Lane County Commissioners. It's called Harris Hall. And but it normally is during the summer months used as a place for the farmers market to set up their stuff. So I'm not sure what the conflict is going to be in the wintertime. There may still be a farmers market going on, I'm not sure. But basically, it started out with the Butterfly Lot being occupied by a few tents and protesters claiming that they were either just camped there under the Eighth Amendment liberalization with the Ninth Circuit Court decision, and or First Amendment grounds that they were protesting the fact that they were homeless or unhoused. And that evolved into a couple of things developed from that. One was this city council of Eugene decided to create this idea that they were going to have a take over their vacant lot that where the old city hall used to be. The city hall had been torn down a few years ago, and there's just this vacant lot with a bunch of gravel on it now. And they were thinking, well, we could put a modest homeless camp there of 60 people. And we had three tents, three 20-man tents, and that were heated during the night, and have what they call the dusk to dawn program, where you can't be in a tent during the day, but they would have a day center nearby where you could be at. And that seemed to be going okay until what happened was that the butterfly lot got a little bit too big for the county to feel comfortable with it. So they decided, well, let's move everyone to this place they call the Highway 99 camp, which is at Roosevelt and Highway 99, which is about 2 miles north of downtown Eugene, out by the railroad tracks, and in a kind of a dilapidated part of town, which my own friend Judy doesn't like that part of town, because she doesn't want to live there because there's too many drug addicts and ne'er-do-wells wandering the streets out there. Doesn't feel comfortable living in that neighborhood. But that neighborhood is what was proposed for the 99 camp, which currently has about anywhere from 100 to 200 people living in it. Because what happened was the county ponied up that spot for people to stay at. And they said, well, you know, it's close to other services at the service station or whatever other service provider. St. Vincent de Paul has a little bit of an outfit out there that serves meals, it has showers, it has a number of different services out there, which would be overloaded by the 200 people being there in the camp, but they would expand it presumably to accommodate the additional people.
John, have you been out to this place yourself?
No, I didn't get a chance to go out there before I left town because I was feeling kind of under the weather with my bronchitis and didn't feel like running around to a lot of different protest situations. Mostly I was helping, when I could spare a moment to get out of the house, I was helping my friend and client Judy B. With her situation. We tried to find her an Airbnb spot, which looked like it might work out for a whole month, but then between one thing and another, it didn't work out because I had to do a third-party booking, which is not allowed under the terms of the service of Airbnb.
Let me ask you this, John.
I couldn't upload her ID using the app.
John, let me ask you this. How many people, what would you estimate the homeless population of Eugene is?
I've heard estimates of 1,000 to 1,500 people, something like that.
And how many of them are in these, you know, government-controlled containment centers?
Well, there's a mission which holds about 300 people, and then there's the Dusk to Dawn camps and the car camping programs, which may accommodate another 100 people altogether. And then I've heard that there's family shelters in the churches. They recently opened a family shelter at the cost of $2 million, which I put an ad in the Eugene Weekly kind of decrying that one because I wasn't clear about whether they simply did a reshuffling of the deck where they built a new shelter for the family, sure, for a cost of $2 million, but then did they continue once a week they moved to a different church program for the additional families, whether that was still continuing or not. I didn't get absolute confirmation from anybody as to whether they were still continuing the once a week you move to a different church program.
So what is the percentage of people who are in fact unsheltered now if you subtract all those who get into these programs?
It could be upwards of 1,000 people, I would think, might be unsheltered, living in tents by the side of the road or in their vehicles, mm-hmm, or whatever.
And how are they being treated? Are they being
vehicle camping?
Are they being left alone? Are they being pursued, even though there's this Boise decision supposedly protecting them?
Well, that's part of what I want to get to in my conversation with you is that at least the people that I know personally are being left alone. Like Judy's being left alone in her truck when she's sleeping on the street, pretty much. And she even got to the point where her license plates were confiscated because she bought the truck and the registration for the new license plate hadn't gone through. So when they stopped at the traffic stop, they thought, oh, the license plate doesn't match the paperwork, so they took her plates. So that worked out so well. She figured out how to solve that problem on her own. She's got a different solution now. It's fine. But,
is there generally a feeling that people are or aren't being left alone?
That's hard to say because I don't personally know enough of them to be sure whether they're really being left alone or not. But I wanted to get on with my conversation with you because it is looking like they're going after people now rather than leaving them alone.
Okay.
It appears to be what happened with the butterfly law was the city council reversed its decision to do the downtown camp at the old city hall lot because of the existence of the 99 camp. And the 99 camp is, I said in my polite, ever so polite county commissioner speech, I said that's not my first choice to have that kind of housing for people, but on Facebook later I called it a shithole camp, which is totally what it is, because it's on rocky ground, it's inaccessible by disabled people, and the wheelchairs or walkers, because it's too rocky, and it's just basically, unless you're on a pallet with your tent, it's going to be way too uncomfortable to sleep there. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, so I just heard a little noise in the background. Anyway, so they had the 99 camp, and they said, okay, everybody move to the 99 camp. Great. They vacated the butterfly lot, so we'll get rid of the idea that we had for the downtown.
When was that?
That was a couple, about 3 or 4 weeks ago, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, that the city council reversed its decision to have the lot at this old city hall site be used as a camp.
Right. I said so. Go ahead.
They chickened out on that one, partly because they got pushed back from the downtown businesses. You know, the businesses are always complaining that they're losing business because homeless people are hanging out near their business.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's like a block or two away, they're still concerned that they're losing business.
Mm-hmm.
And that was actually the subject of a video that the Jazzy Ladies coffee house, which I frequented once in a while, the owner was complaining, oh, the someone bars near my business on the sidewalk, and people, after 2 o'clock in the afternoon, there's all these cops hanging out at the park blocks, and it's driving my customers away.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, well, I still go to your business, lady, mm-hmm. even though there might be a couple of cop cars hanging around, but whatever.
So what's next? Is there pushback against the pushback?
So basically what happened was the 99 camp got established, the butterfly lot was evacuated, but most of the people went to the 99 camp, and then the city council reversed its decision to have the downtown camp on the city hall lot, and then people started getting a little bit annoyed with, first of all, it's a dusk to dawn camp that they want to impose at the 99 lot, and Eric Jackson was allegedly in charge of the camp that was initially moved there. He thought he had a verbal contract with the county to proceed and run the camp himself, sort of like Larry Templeman running Camp Paradise, I guess, back in 2001 in Santa Cruz. He had this idea that the county had a verbal contract with him to run the camp himself instead of having the service provider, St. Vincent de Paul, run a dusk to dawn camp program out there.
So previously there was an agreement for a 24-hour camp, and that was violated?
That was a verbal agreement, which apparently was violated, yeah.
Okay. Anything else?
And then, okay, so when all those things started happening, then people started going back to the butterfly lot. And that happened over the last week or week and a half. The people started going back to the butterfly lot in earnest. And they were up to 50 tents there as of a couple of days ago. And in the meantime, during all this, the county commissioners proposed an emergency ordinance which would make the butterfly lot have the same curfew as the rest of the properties in downtown Eugene, which is you can't be there after 11 o'clock at night until 6 in the morning. For any purpose, no matter whether you're protesting or not. And I floated the idea at the county commissioners meeting as part of my speech and also part of my email that I sent to them later saying, hey, wait a minute, you know, having a curfew may sound neutral on its face, but it really does discriminate against a particular form of protest, so it's not really content neutral. It's my interpretation of what I see. Mm-hmm. So I would argue that if it ever went to court, that it's not really content neutral.
Is the local ACLU jumping into the fray, perhaps?
I don't know. They might be.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, the anticipation of this curfew being imposed on the butterfly lot, and also apparently in response to their latest excuses, they had to clean the ground and get the grass prepared for the protest against the county policies regarding the homeless was going to happen in that exact same spot on Friday. So they decided to come in and sweep all the tents out. As of today, they decided to sweep all the tents off the property and get rid of all the homeless people and unhoused people that are hanging out there. And that's the latest that's happened just today.
Well, continue to follow that story, and I appreciate the update. Any final words?
In addition to all this stuff, if you go to GoFundMe and look at Judy Baker Unhoused, search for those terms, you'll see a whole complete story of, or Judy B, I should say. You can see the whole entire story of Judy B's experience with being homeless during the past year. And it's really kind of a sad story. If it wasn't for the fact that Valley Ridge Apartments wouldn't take her on as my roommate, she would have avoided all this trouble. But because she had just a little bit of a problem with parking her van on the property and got kicked out, she couldn't stay there as my roommate. And that led to a whole series of problems throughout the year that would have been solved if she just found out to stay in my apartment. And that's the story on there, on that GoFundMe page. And then also I'm going to be making a call since Judy got kicked out of the Airbnb spot she was at, because we did essentially a third party booking, which was against the rules, I guess. And the reason why that happened was because
I'm going to have to cut this short, John. John, the details, can't get into the details at this time because I'm crammed here, but
Anyway, I'm going to be making a call to Airbnb tomorrow to talk about their open homeless program.
Wish you luck with that.
The homeless people in addition to refugees and disaster victims.
Okay.
So there's a whole slew of disaster victims coming from Paradise that'll be using open homes, and they'll be probably competing with homeless people if we can ever get them to open up the idea of using it for homeless people.
Okay, well, maybe we can
spot the Airbnb.
It's coming too fast and thick for me to follow, but maybe we can pick up on more of this when we talk again.
Well, I could let you know on Sunday my results of what I talked to Airbnb about tomorrow, if you want.
We'll talk about it in a future show. Tomorrow I'm going to be out there doing a protest myself. We'll see what happens, and good luck to you up there.
Okay, all right.
Hey,
talk to you later.
Thank you, John. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that was Dangerous John Teal King, formerly of Santa Cruz, then of San Jose, now of Eugene.
Tony Little as her personal trainer. she even started. We sanitized her bedroom and we vacuumed her thighs. We sent her off to college with collagen in her eyes. Said don't come back until you won the Pulitzer Prize. Nothing but the best for our little girl. Live-in psychic and designer tranquilizer. Nothing but the best for our little girl. Home where she belongs to us. We hired a private eye to let us know what she does. We bought a third world country for her just because. We think she's something else. She says she wishes she was. Nothing but the best for our little girl. Primal Scream Coaching and the Betty Ford Clinic. Nothing but the best for our little girl. Home where she belongs. We're never home where she belongs to us.
Yeah, that was Nothing But the Best from Roy Zimmerman's Peacenik album. So on the line with me is activist Brent Adams, who is... what are you doing there, Brent? What's happening?
We focus on storing people's belongings with the Day and Night Storage Program, and we're gearing up for doubling down on Warming Center this winter.
Gotcha. And you're getting a lot of favorable commentary from a number of folks, many of them homeless, I would point out. But I've also got some interesting stuff we had meetings today of Conscious in Action and Huff, and we had some reports from a guy who's at the beach, and I'm going to be playing that later on this show, that the Parks and Rec are leaving tents on the beach alone up during the day. Plus, of course, there's Jessica York's story in the Sentinel, or the Sentinel, as I like to call it, which has pictures of a tent encampment around Ross. What's been your... I know you're probably working pretty much full-time on these two projects you mentioned, but any news about, you know, the 95% of the people outside who aren't using either the city services or yours yet?
Yeah, you know, people are really hard-pressed to find a place where they can last for a while. The Ross encampment has been slowly growing over the last 2 months. It's always been kind of that end of the levee snag there, kind of dead end, if you're familiar with it. And it's a complex balance between state property, not the Caltrans along the highway, but actual state property there behind Ross Building, and then city property abutting the beside along the levee with Caltrans. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Caltrans property on the other side of the fence.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what has happened is, for whatever reason, in terms of policing and jurisdictional, that state property closest to the levee, they've allowed tents, but not further down where it seems more appropriate and logical. You know, further behind closer to the intersection, where I believe it's city property. And I actually think the city has that wrong, because I've seen the plans for that intersection, and I believe it's actually the other way around. I think it's city property close to the levee and actual state property beyond. So I'll have to get that map up. But anyway, and that is I don't know how to say it in the most polite terms. It's a using community there, if you know what I'm saying.
Drug using. Hard drug using.
But primarily, there are a lot of people there who we call them purchasing and using clubs, the ability for people to get what they need, and it makes sense for people to congregate with each other because, and it's not, I'm not saying illegal, anything illegal, it's just sometimes it's easier to have the power in terms of purchasing with others. So, but also, people take care of each other, you know, for as long as they're keeping it relatively clean. But let's talk about the river mouth, I believe is where a lot of tents are, or on the main beach, usually from halfway at the beach towards halfway down the main beach towards the river levee, the river mouth, there are a number of tents, and we keep getting reports that there are 10, 15, and then I'll go look down there and I'll see maybe two or three, but I keep hearing that there are 10 to 15 tents down there, and that's a lighter community. That is not typically a using community. They're a little bit more independent and loosely interacting, maybe more alcohol-oriented.
Mm-hmm. Any? How about near a lagoon or other places? I notice they seem to have cleared away the area near Coral Street a lot, although...
After that house fire, that area got really hammered. They had to clean that out. If you remember, there was an encampment fire 2 months ago down there, that caught a house. Near a lagoon, I haven't been down there for a while, always down in the cuts. Prior to rain, you'll see lots of people down on the other side of the fence. It's a really awesome sort of wonderland down there, you know, maze-like space. But as soon as the rain hits, it's done. Because it's a lagoon, of course. But many other places, where, you know, I think Pogonip is ripe currently. Like I said, I think I talked to you last week, there, and in that newspaper article, Jessica York, I was caught saying the word blitzkrieg, that there had been, you know, just an all-out press for about a week straight, especially in the former Paradise area and other areas, you know, Sycamore Grove, things like that, just really got hammered. And so I haven't been out to see.
By the which you mean the police were hammering them?
Yeah, the police and the Parks Department and even some, you know, community groups were out there cleaning those areas up. I haven't been. This evening I went by Coral Street in that corner, and there's still some people out there, but not as much as they had been. Mm-hmm. In general, I really don't know where the hundreds and hundreds of people are. We still have a brisk business at the storage program, people coming and going, and they're reporting being at the Pogonip or in various doorways in and around. I think, the Harvey West area down to, between there and downtown.
Mm-hmm. Will you be coming to the Camp Quest Speak Out tomorrow in order to, you know, well, probably most people are aware of the services you provide, but as far as I'm concerned, you're invited to come and speak, by the way.
Thank you. What I would normally encourage is that people who are brought in really understand that the challenge of doing something that may have police coming. You know, my main complaints about Freedom Sleepers and Peace Camp 2010. I was very much in support of Peace Camp 2010, finally Occupy Santa Cruz. But anyway, just to realize that that to do something that's a police attractant, we have to really understand that police are likely to come and that people can get citations, and it feels really good to be a part of a movement, a community, an uprising. But what we've saw at Peace
Freedom Sleepers,
is that there's so many. And this is what we're learning, Robert. A lot of these citations go to collection, and people have – then they don't – so check this out. Jeremy Leonard was doing the rapid rehousing role for the last 6 months at Homeless Services Center. He has so many people have – so many tickets and collections that he's got to get them housing once their Section 8 is ripe or HUD bash or anything like that, to get the housing, to qualify for whatever, you know, some of these housing contracts, credit checks, he has to go and it's almost like a spaghetti work of problems. So it's we don't encourage people who are experiencing homelessness to get these types of citations if they ever think they were going to have a promise of housing again.
Mm-hmm. How successful?
Something I think activists should really be aware of.
How successful has Jeremy been in dealing with these things?
There's no housing out there.
So it's sort of academic.
He's been moderately successful. I think he's completely burned already, and he quit the job after 6 months. And he's a strong man.
Yeah, I remember him. He was doing a lot of work around exposing Take Back Santa Cruz stuff.
Yeah. He was the one that got that video of Skin Dog, whatever that guy's name was.
And it was a big secret years ago.
What happened to Skin Dog?
I haven't seen him lately, but, you know, he probably got ousted. I think he was probably, this is a fellow who, I guess, seemed to be abusively treating someone on a video as Take Back Santa Cruz roamed the area looking for needles in some of the camps way back 5 years ago. And I can't.
Continue, sorry.
Yeah, that's right. I remember chatting with him at city council. He was speaking at oral communication. I was too. I think he got disenfranchised from the Take Back Santa Cruz group, which is always in a somewhat tumultuous situation. There's a lot of, I think there's some internal dissent there. That's the conservative group that wishes to treat homeless people often as essentially, generally as criminals, not entirely, but somewhat. And, you know, that's...
It's funny you've got a little primer on Take Back Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a famous big wave surfer. Works for Volcom, and, you know, he surfs Mavericks and runs a whole, crew of people who attack Mavericks. And he was going to run for supervisor there for a minute when his head got big. And then he was caught keying a car down at on one of those East Cliff beaches and even threatening a surfer down there. And he had to do a little jail time. That was really embarrassing for him.
And he hasn't showed up at the day and night storage.
I haven't seen him since. He's not a homeless guy. No. I understand the need. And what I prefer to talk about is when activists are using terms like "people may die." Then I would like to see them doubling down and helping build community around services like that we're producing that receive zero government funding. It's completely, out of a need on the street of people who are actually dying. We think of Michael Myers and many others who die of hypothermia. The mission statement is to reduce the experience of hypothermia and the occurrence of death.
Have you had much connection with the Harm Reduction Coalition folks?
A little bit. You know, I hung out with them today at Project Connect. I kind of want to see them in a way. You know, they're playing nice and trying to do the legislative path, but we know that there, you know, and it's funny because it's a corollary between you would like to see, like I'm trying to do somewhat the more moderate path of building nonprofit programs and running programs and seeking grant money, right? That's kind of a legitimate way to try to help meet basic homeless needs. On the other side would be, you know, a renegade camp that just says, let's by any means necessary provide camping right now. Mm-hmm. I would love to do that, but I'm always afraid that, again, putting people who experience homelessness in front of police and then putting a lot of energy into something that the city's going to squash because they have a history of doing that.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Well, the organization you just mentioned, the coalition, what's it called?
Harm Reduction Coalition.
Right. So there's this woman in Toronto, maybe you've heard, she just set up an easy up. She's a nurse and just said she's going to do her own goddamn harm reduction, clean injection site.
Good for her, man.
And all of a sudden, the entire community, the faith community, came in and they gave her a trailer, and now she's got like an authentic clean injection site. I guess in Toronto, where they weren't going to do it at all. And it's funny because Denise Elderick is telling me the story, and I'm like, Denise, I'll buy you the easy up. Just do it. It's funny because he's trying to do this authentic thing. It's kind of like, you know, starting a renegade camp or trying to authentically get...
Well, you know, what I always tell people, and I discussed this today at the Huff meeting, is needle exchange started here as a renegade operation, and so did marijuana distribution. And, you know, I mean, that is one path, and yours is another. It doesn't mean that they're mutually exclusive, you know. I mean, you do what you can.
We have this thing we call Plan B, that if our work never works, then we're just going to fucking set up the world's great greatest, you know, renegade camp that, you know, and run it really, really excellently. Like, what we challenge the people who host these camps is it has never been done very well. It's mostly a camp of words and fluff and bullshit. There's really not, it says a safe camp. It's anything but safe when you put people in line of cops and being woken up at 3 a.m. It's just ludicrous. So let's do an authentic one. Instead of always dragging ass out in front of the post office or in front of City Hall or do a real, like, have some meetings about what these camps look like across the West Coast and how they were successful. But here we go again, doing another protest camp, poorly planned by some of the people in town that should never do it again because they failed over and over and over. Come on, yourself included.
Well, I think I do disagree with you on that, but, you know, nonetheless, I think there's room, you know, for your approach, this approach, and also even a third approach. But the more approaches, if I'm concerned, the better, and we'll see what happens. I think pressure on the city council is, you know, you're at least being given being given some newspaper space by our old pal Jessica York. So that's, you know, are they kicking you down any money yet, or is it still?
It looks like in that article, I was the only one willing to talk. If you look at that article, it's really thin on actual interviews. So I think she was just putting out what she could.
She never called me. I mean, for heaven's sake.
Never called me what I really want to talk about and what we should have been talking about, and I feel stupid about not, is that we should be talking about the warming center doubling down. Being ready, like the Red Cross or the fire department, for an extreme condition situation that might happen this winter, where because of there's a very large deduction in shelter beds,
reduction.
There might be as few as 40 beds compared to the traditional 100, 60 at the VFW, but most of those are going to go to the people within the River Street encampment. So that gets
Well, the latest I heard from that is that they're giving them one day there. That was the word from Joyful Heart.
Check this out. I don't believe it's true because you've got the women are likely going over to the over the Salvation Army, and then anybody who has a large. Well, here's I'll let this one out of the bag, but they're trying to. What are they doing? They're like writing contracts for people. But let's just say it's true. 60 authentic, low barrier, easy to access, so-called shelter beds at the VFW. But there's going to be 3 or 4 shuttle locations. Now the question is, how does a person know which shuttle location to go and why? Well, they're going to be signing them up. It's not low barrier. These shuttle locations you're going to be designated a shuttle location based on your need. Some of that we are hearing, and here's the bright news. Warming Center is getting ready to, we may never do it, but we're getting ready to open for twice the number of people that we normally do. We've already purchased $7,000 to $10,000 in extra bedding materials, blankets, floor pads that can accommodate system-wide as many potentially as 200 people within the county, including Watsonville. We have our Sprinter van, a new delivery van. Patty Brady, if you know this guy from the faith community, has gifted us, his organization, a diesel box truck that he's outfitted with shelves and put some plastic bins in it. We didn't even ask for it. We hope we might be able to use it. Right now it just feels like too much. And then we're hiring a person. So we're ready to open for twice the number of nights for twice as many people. And it's really, you know, I don't know if we can do that, but that's what we're trying to do.
Twice the number of nights would still be a very small, be minority of the nights for the winter, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, we're a pop-up for the coldest, wettest nights. But
yeah,
what
no, I understand.
Do is we're the backup for the regular system. We should never be compared with the regular system because we don't get a penny of money from them.
I don't have much.
What we do is we go from 36 degrees. We started at 32 degrees. Then we went to 34 degrees last year. Then we went to 35, and last year we were at 36.
Yeah, I'm not. I've got no words of praise for the.
And then we're going up to 38 degrees this winter.
Uh-huh.
But that, if you look at the historical data, that could be 30 to 40 nights. It could be 20 nights. You still, you know, it depends on how.
Right. My point, though, is that if you add yours and theirs together, it's small. It's a fraction of the homeless still. So I mean, that's what people have to understand. Also, I want to point out that I watched this. Well, I heard some of the city council directly on Tuesday, as well as watching it on TV. Susie O'Hara was talking about using you as your storage program as a sort of an integral part of the winter shelter. So you're,
oh my God.
Yeah. She's talking about that and saying, well, we're going to, because there were questions, well, are these people going to have any place to store their stuff? Oh, yeah, we're going to take it over to you know, day and night storage over there with Brent Adams.
I've got to fucking dial that up on, can I see the Upwork? I have to look at it because I missed it. I was been so busy.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny that we didn't get a call. We've been waiting for a call from the city and or county. Because, you know, we're able to authentically raise these temperature thresholds and say authentically that we're going to double down on the number of people. We're only saying that right now. Like, I don't have the floor space for that. We only have the three churches, and we have never opened redundant churches.
Well, you know, Susie O'Hara never got any prizes for accuracy and consistency.
No, that's true. Also, I'll let since she's already let it out there. The winter shelter, actually Rainey Marr and Harold, Captain Harold Lavak of the Salvation Army, had a meeting with me in our office where, they asked if we could put one of the shuttle locations in front of our building on Filker Street. Mm-hmm. And in order to offer storage, because right now the shelter, and I hope she's being really clear, but the shelter program that they're presenting has no storage. But traditionally, of course, the armory didn't have storage, but then over the last 2 years, we've come to expect storage as a component, maybe 3 years, 2 years, that they have, you know, out on the River Street, the Boneyard, when that was intake for the winter shelter, 2 years ago, they had the storage bin, and over the last year, they also offered storage out at the VFW and the Salvation Army. So now that they're reorganizing the program, they're not able to use the Salvation Army as an intake point, so that complicates the storage thing. So we were invited to entertain the idea of storing people's belongings with the winter shelter. I'm like, that's crazy because, again, we're not taking bikes or bike trailers. We're doing it out of a little office suite of four rooms, and while the location is perfect,
you don't have the storage space, is what you're saying.
And we also can't blow. The reason we're here right now, seen as a successful program, is because we have worked so hard keeping the neighbor tenants happy and the entire street and neighborhood happy. And we've done such a good job that the daycare across the street that was most alarmed about us moving here has been so happy that we've actually reduced the impact of homelessness on this street and in the neighborhood. Which is a miracle, by the way. That's how successful this program is. That they're using our meeting room. The daycare is using our meeting room for family counseling, family parenting skills.
There was a similar, I think, phenomenon that happened when Camp Paradise was around in 2001. There was that campground was spent a lot of time developing relations with the community. You know, that's under Larry Templeton. But it's interesting.
The problem here, yeah. Is he still alive?
I thought I saw him the other day, but I'm not sure what his situation is.
So when we were told that they wanted to put a shuttle stop for the winter shelter at 150 Felker Street, I freaked out. Like, hell no, we can't. Our relationship with the landlord and the tenants and the neighbors we can't have people congregating in that way, so we can't have a shuttle stop. But I suggested a number of things. Let's put it down in the cul-de-sac away and never say 150 cul-de-sac, Felker, and never tie them together because it'll be a catastrophe for the success of our program. We're trying to have light impact, so that the community doesn't feel like we're intentionally stacking services just right at this point. We can't have people kind of lining the street.
Well, you better get on the horn to that.
What's happened is I proposed something. We can't really talk about it too much, but we need some funding. We need the city to open a gate on the fence here because our property abuts the levee, and then put an intake space out here so it doesn't impact the street. So she had a call into me today, but I was at Project Connect, so I couldn't take it. What we're proposing is that the county help lightly fund the warming center's expansion this winter, help us in our aim to protect twice the number of people that we normally do, and then help us with a little bit of funding for the storage program. The city would also allow us to use, if you recall, 2 years ago they voted unanimously to allow Warming Center to use the Harvey West clubhouse. If we're not able to use the Salvation Army for 10 nights, as the captain has indicated we could, because I think they're going to put women and children over there at the Salvation Army, so then the city would, then we end up with not a backup space. So I'm really talking a lot here, but the city would allow us to use the rest of the backup space, help us with a gate here. Then we could have off-street access where people wouldn't be lining the street, and then we can control that population a little better and maybe entertain them in a off-street, you know, it won't visually impact the neighborhood.
Gotcha.
We have a back alley. We could switch our operations from the front of the building to the back of the building. We could actually do this, but we need support to do it. And I kind of need I'm getting, you know, maybe, I think the county is saying it looks pretty good, but there's no guarantee they'll be able to help us with a little bit of funding.
And I'm going to have to jump in here because I'm running out of space in my own broadcast. But, you know, I wish you luck with these, you know, attempts to get these different bureaucrats to play ball. And
let me say something really quickly.
Yeah.
I'm going to butt in. So there's a huge, disgusting, gnarly accident on Highway 1 yesterday.
Yeah, I read about it.
I was there. Robert,
yeah.
The encampment there behind Ross, those people were front and center, and it was the most amazing sound of all, and it was incredibly devastating. You know, this truck just barreled through almost two dozen vehicles, and it was so destructive. And those people, they all jumped the fence from that encampment, and they went right into the most frightful, you know, scene you'd ever imagine. They helped people get out of their cars. They directed traffic. They ushered. There were six little kids in this smashed soccer mom van, and they all got out. One little girl had a little cut on her finger, but they helped get them across the street, and they, you know, over to the camp and on the levee, safe. They were directing traffic the whole time. It was really until the cops got there. That encampment, they're all heroes in my book. They, you know, where most people would just stand there aghast, they just went right into it and it helped a lot of people.
Did you take any photos for your own Homeless Outside in Santa Cruz Facebook page?
Yeah, I mean, I did a lot of video reports, not specifically of that. I actually did a little bit of video focusing on that. But mainly I got a lot of photographs of the truck burning, and I was there within 2 minutes after the thing, and I was shuddering. I couldn't it was really difficult to
I hear you. Well, I'm going to leave it there and try to avoid creating any more accidents, Brent.
All right, I'll be there. What time is it going to be tomorrow?
Yeah, it starts at 4, and it'll go from 4 to 7. And of course, while this broadcast is broadcasting, we're going to end up at the Planning Commission because they're attempting to, there's an issue where they're going to try to tear down buildings all along Front Street and put up a six-story, I don't know, it's a parking garage or some kind of...
No, on both sides of Front Street, also a specific...
Luxury housing.
Two distinct six-story buildings, yeah.
Yeah, and most of it is, you know, not inclusionary stuff. It's, you know, it's for the wealthy that they want to bring in because they want to get more tax money, and they also want to gentrify the community, which is, of course, bad news for ordinary people here. If you want to get a hold of Brent, you should give him a call at...
We have a brand new hotline number. It's 246-1234.
Say that again.
246-1234.
All right. Well, then... There you go.
OneLinkCenterProgram@gmail.com. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. And that was Brent Adams. And now let's see if we can find a little music to rest by.
Oh, Sergeant, I'm a draftee and I've just arrived in camp. I've come to wear the uniform and join the martial tramp. And I want to do my duty, but one thing I do implore. You must give me lessons, Sergeant, for I've never killed before. To do my job obediently is my only desire. To learn my weapon thoroughly and how to aim and fire. To learn to kill the enemy and then to slaughter more. I'll need instruction, Sergeant, for I've never killed before. Now there are rumors in the camp about our enemy. They say that when you see him, he looks just like you and me. But you deny it, Sergeant, and you are a man of war. So you must give me lessons, for I've never killed before. Now there are several lessons that I haven't mastered yet. I haven't got the hang of how to use the bayonet. If he doesn't die at once, am I to stick him with it more? Oh, I hope you will be patient, for I've never killed before. And the hand grenade is something that I just don't understand. You've got to throw it quickly or you're apt to lose your hand. Does it blow a man to pieces with its wicked muffled roar? I've got so much to learn because I've never killed before. Well, I want to thank you, Sergeant, for the help you've been to me. You've taught me how to kill and how to hate the enemy. And I know that I'll be ready when they march me off to war. And I know that it won't matter that I've never killed before. I know that it won't matter that I've never killed before.
That was Pete Seeger, the dead Pete Seeger. The Willing Conscript. You're tuned to the stream of free radio at freakradio.org. We're still looking for a studio, and we're looking for a transmitter site. Pretty soon we'll be looking to find where our heads are at. But in any case, if you help us with the studio space, we have a bit of a bonus for you, the one that you've heard before if you're a regular listener to the show, $300. So come and pick it up. All we need is essentially information that will lead us to a spot we can use for a year, 10 by 10 space, electricity, internet, bathroom access. It'd be nice if it was near a bus line so that ordinary folks who don't have more expensive vehicles can get access to it too. Give a call to me. I'm one of the collective, 423-4833. 423-4833. That's also the HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom line. And it's where you also call if you've got new information on what's going on out there in the campsites. That's one of the issues we were raising at the HUF meeting recently, which happens every Wednesday, more or less. If the HUF isn't happening, then it's a sort of brother organization, Conscience in Action, is meeting. We meet every week, 11 o'clock at the Sub Rosa Cafe. And if you want to get involved in this stuff and you're listening to this broadcast live, so to speak, although it is a previously recorded broadcast, between 6 and 8, we're going to be either at the, some of us are going to be at the post office in the Camp Quest protest, or maybe even camping outside City Hall. That could happen. You know, people have no place to go. There's a court decision in place that says if people have no place to go, they've got to go where they can. And we'll see how that one works. And we'll be learning, talking about the ins and outs of it. By the time you've heard this, we'll have talked about it somewhat already. But the issue will continue to rise because every night people have campsites they have to go to. And my immediate concern is that police, if they are actually following a hands-off policy, which I'm not sure they are, then that's a good first step. But, of course, people need access to bathrooms, trash pickups, camping supplies, warm clothing, things of that sort, as just a matter of reality for human survival, particularly because many folks, these folks are disabled, elderly, and vulnerable. And, yeah, some are drug users, no question about it. Some are alcoholics. Some have psychological problems and conditions. But then so do folks who are housed. So don't forget that. Let's go to this. These are interviews from the Calvary Episcopal Red Church, where people chow down at 6 o'clock on Mondays. I missed the MHCAN service. That's the Mental Health Clients Action Network speakers that talk regularly there every month. Never heard him speak, but probably will at some point. But I do slip into the chow line and chat with people, and here's some of that. So I'm down here at the Red Church about to wander into the line, and I'm talking with
Drake Mitchell.
And Drake, I haven't seen you in a month of Sundays.
Well, someone said that Mr. Afghanistan just got back and the return date's classified.
Oh, dear. And you say that you've seen tents at the beach without the busts.
That is correct. There seems to be a sea change in the policy regarding tents and people sleeping in tents at the beach. The only concern on patrol with a humane, compassionate patrol officer was whether there was littering. So that means we can get solar panels, and if the solar panels are donated properly, they will not be considered litter. Mm-hmm. The solar panels can be used to establish charging stations for phones and charging batteries. So there's going to probably be a trafficking in rechargeable batteries at the beach.
How long have you been back?
Classified.
I see. Well, listen, it's good to see you again. Anything you want to add?
I am now affiliated and attached to the Stanford Medical School, where hopefully I'll be editor-in-chief of the first new weed journal in the Ivy League in 30 years.
Very nice. In the meantime, spread it around.
And let's make Harvard really jealous.
You're here. Thank you.
Amen.
Thank you, Drake. Announcement, everybody, although maybe it's not necessary because everybody got one of these probably. I'll leave some of these on the table. This is sort of a schedule of stuff coming up. There's a shitty council meeting tomorrow, and at 5:30 is a chance to talk not so much to the council that doesn't care, but to the community that some of them may care somewhere. Hard to say. That's at 5:30. You go out on television for 2 minutes if you stand in line and talk. We're also probably going to be making signs for the protest coming up on Thursday, which I'm calling it Camp Quest, because we're looking for a campsite, or that's what we're going to be talking about anyway, if not looking. We might even do that. Might even camp in front of the city council, although, well, we'll see. Wednesday, the day after tomorrow, there's the final meetings at the Sub Rosa Cafe, which is next to the bike church, 10 o'clock in the morning. If you're interested in this protest, we're kind of getting together, free coffee, hang out, chatter and chat, and, you know, talk about other stuff too, like you gotten tickets, you gotten harassment. I'll be there with my little recorder. I'm here today doing the same thing, trying to get for free radio your accounts so they can be passed on, at least somebody will hear them, and maybe they're also archived, so you can actually hear them later if you haven't got access. We're not broadcasting right now, but we are on the stream. The FCC went after us, so we're looking for another transmitter site. Then on Thursday, there's going to be a coffee, food, babble, speakers from out of town, all on the steps of the post office, all about the issue of where to camp, what the police are doing to you or you happen to sleep, and what should we do next, or what should you do next. I, of course, will go home and sleep somewhere, but nonetheless, I'll be there babbling away. That's what I'm doing. So, any other announcements anybody's got that they want to make?
Is it true that they're closing the shelter on... I'm getting different questions of what shelters are going to be open on the 15th. I've gotten the story, and some of you may know, because some of you may be from the River Street campground. I'm told that it is being closed in incremental kind of numbers, so that on the 16th, 10 or 15 people will be told to leave. A few days later, another 10 or 15. A few days after that, 5 or 10. And eventually, people by the end of the month will all be told to go. They'll be given one free night at the 7th Avenue campground. If you're a mother with a child or a family, they're maybe opening up the Laurel Street Salvation Army place again. I'm not sure of that. That's what I know about that, which is subject to the latest whims of Susie O'Hara and the city council. She's the woman who's in charge of the campground and supposedly then just changed everything around so the campground got dumped many, many months early. Anything? That's what's going on, pretty much. Well, here it is. Check it out. Anybody get any tickets in the last week? Raise your hand if you got a citation of any kind. That looks pretty good, actually, if nobody got a citation. All right. Thank you. Yeah, that's what I got.
Thank you.
Anybody got any questions? Thank you, sir.
Yeah, what do you know about the VFW hall?
That's the VFW hall, as Steve Plaich will tell you, is the place where, I guess that's the main shelter that's opening right now. Right, Steve?
The VFW hall, on
7th, yes, but not the vets hall.
When?
It opens up what on the 15th? I think it's 15th or the 16th.
Unsure of the date.
Unsure of the date, and I don't know either. Sorry about that one. Any other questions that we don't have any answers to? Thank you. I'll be around with this, trying to get. If you got some stuff you want to talk about for free radio, the stream, I'm interested. And I'll leave some flyers here if you didn't get one.
Fred Church, and I'm talking with
Steve.
Steve, you just gave me a new phone number, and you also are seeking legal help.
Yes, I'd like to find an attorney to help me a lawsuit against a ranger, a particular one, for harassment and what I consider torture. I think if most people had witnessed it, they would say it was definitely torture.
This is the Harvey West don't get any water.
A Harvey West person. I'll be 65 in about 30 days. He's picked on the elderly, and especially women, two women. One he tackled because she didn't respond. She was sleeping in the park. I guess that warranted tackling when she got up and dragged her sleeping bag away. And then another, he broke her when she was sleeping in her car, another woman. Used her elbow, I guess, to wake her up. You're sleeping, and broke her window and didn't even apologize. Told her she gave her a ticket instead.
So Steve here is looking for an assistance from an attorney to deal with an abusive situation with a ranger, and his number, in case you have any thoughts or hints, or you're an attorney who wants to help out, is...
My number...
I got it here, 559-473-7967, is that right?
That's correct.
I think that's right.
Yeah, I really have had enough, and there's plenty of people out there that will say, yeah, I'm glad Steve's doing this, because especially the elderly and women is what he picks on, and the homeless for sure.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Anybody have anything they want to say for free radio?
I'll say that I voted for 3 new city council members. I don't know if they won or not. Well, one was one of the incumbents, Rochelle Naroyan. And I also voted for Donna Myers and Drew. I can't remember their last name. Glover. Drew Glover. That's right. So even though I laughed, if I would have remembered that right then, I would have winced when I heard shitty council on that paper.
Well, I tend to call them as I smell them, you know, that sort of
thing. Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, I would say some of them would probably be like that, but not all of them. And the thing is we got to not alienate them from us. We got to get them to listen to us. So calling them shitty ain't going to help any. It's counterproductive.
You can go and clean up the language and say something tomorrow at the shitty council. And we've been talking with
Dina.
Thank you, Dina. Anything you want to add? Any hassles recently or good times? Anything you want to say?
I haven't personally had any hassle, and also because I sleep at the north end of town, and I just kind of treat the area like a bike and hike. So, yeah, I just kind of pack it in and pack it out.
Dig it. Thank you, Dina.
You're welcome.
With an anonymous source here, who, you know, there's nothing negative that you've said. You simply described that there's a, it's, you know, it's a, talking about, what's the name of the place again? It's,
everybody help me.
I think it's Mary Joseph, and I've heard of them before. All right. See, an anonymous shelter that shelters how many people again?
We have 5 women and 7 children.
And there's a fairly long waiting list.
Yes, there is.
And it does allow you to be gone during the day or stay absolutely during the day.
Absolutely.
And you have to be in by 9.
Or 10 on the weekend.
Or 10 on the weekends. And you've been associated with us for how long? How long have you been there?
I've been living there close to 13 years.
And has it changed much?
Well, when I came there, there were men and women living, and it was much more short term. But about 12 or 10 years ago, it became a shelter just for women and children. And we've had several hospice patients also.
Right. And what's your feeling about the shelter? Is it, it sounds like you have positive feelings about it.
It's a good place for people to find the housing, find the jobs and the skills and the go through the hoops that were being discussed earlier. I mean, just in other words, they get a chance to have a place to rest and, you know, while they're doing this, and get more focused in a way that allows them to go to the next step of a permanent situation.
How long does it take your average resident to find work or find another place to live?
It varies from, I'd say about a year is probably an average.
You're a person who originally arrived there as a worker or as a person who was sheltered or both?
I have been living at the soup kitchen like 25 years ago, and I came over there from being on staff at the soup kitchen, and then I stayed for a year, left for about 11 years, had my own place in Felton, and then came back when that was, the landlord sold it and I didn't have a place to go, and then I came back there, and then I went to Watsonville, and then that also,
they sold that one out from under you too.
Yeah, something like that.
I mean, so in a way, this is really kind of emergency housing for you, to some extent.
I mean, it was open to me. I have been always associated with the place, whether I was living there or not. I was coming there and helping with chapel and things like that.
So, what kind of work do you do there?
Answering the phone. Cleaning the pantry, doing house laundry.
Are you a pianist there as well?
To some extent.
Well, you know you're a pianist here. Aha, I'm exposing your identity. Watch your step.
Uh-oh. Okay. Well, I would say that I'm more, I like to play Happy Birthday when it's a birthday celebration. And maybe a little also on Thanksgiving Day.
Can I offer you a free brownie?
No, I can't. Thank you.
Maybe.
Just gluten problems and sugar problems in general.
You probably have too, but I don't know it. Well, I would ask who we're talking to, but I think you want to keep a low profile. Is that
it is better to keep lower
profile.
Yeah.
All right. Well, maybe we'll feel free to come to the protest on Thursday. That's going to be the camp. It's at 4 o'clock. It's called Camp Quest, and it's on the steps of the post office. We're looking for a campground because people outside got no place to go.
and we're going to talk about it, maybe do something. We'll see.
I know I have a rehearsal at 6 o'clock that night, but maybe before then I can come to the release part of that.
Check it out.
Thank you. I really appreciate all you're doing. I appreciate all you're doing.
Oh, well, thank you for what you do, too.
Guys, good.
Cheers.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
With ICE, Dina, I feel like calling ICE and having him deported.
You're talking about Steve the sexton.
Yeah.
What did he do today that disturbed you?
Well, you know, he keeps bossing people around like, you know, he thinks he's the king of the universe or something. And when you're dining, you need to leave.
He's the guy who's gathering at the chair.
Was he not born yesterday? Seriously? I was not born fucking yesterday. First, oh, leave when I'm done eating. You know what? Fuck him. He could go to hell.
Thank you, babe. Appreciate you expressing your feeling on that.
Yeah.
I see a lot of clattering is going on around here.
Apparently, yeah.
Yes. All right, then.
Well, at least you can still hear.
Yeah.
And the clattering, of course, was Steve the Sextant forcibly, loudly, and demonstrably putting away chairs and making people feel essentially unwelcome in the area in order to encourage them to leave. Steve is also the fellow who walks outside and tells you you can't stand on the path and talk outside the church. You know, it might disturb the grass or, I don't know, the paint on the building, or it's against the rules in any case. And he often comes up to me and chides me and demands I move, and I say, no, I'm not interested in moving. Steve, leave me alone. But he makes a lot of people feel uncomfortable, essentially, because he, you know, in theory, I guess, he can threaten people with eviction from the program. The same kinds of penalties that Brent can use at his day and night storage, that Phil Kramer and the staff of the Homeless Lack of Services Center can use out at Coral Street, that Sarah Leonard can use at the MH Can if you dare to park within two blocks and sit in the car and you're using her services. It's outrageous, and it's essentially a surrender to the kind of bigotry of the surrounding community or some influential, nasty voices in the surrounding community. And it's good to push back and say no thank you. At least that's what I've been seeking to do and encourage others to do for year after year. Sexton Steve also will prevent people from taking food out of the building. Let's say to people who maybe can't come in because they're just too disabled to come into the building, or they're at a campsite nearby or far away, or maybe a person hasn't finished their food and they want to take it with them. Nope. It reminds me of the time that a Santa Cruz police officer drew a gun on a couple and their mother trying to take food out of the Salvation Army. And there was no protest from the Salvation Army out on Laurel Street. That was at Thanksgiving, gosh, 3 or 4 years ago. And we did a lot of recording about it, trying to raise the issue with the police department. Of course, it went nowhere. But I'm sure under Andy Mills, all that has changed. Not, actually.
You take care of me. Come in, grab some food before it closes down. Hey. Good luck with the bike.
Hey.
Hey, you. Where do you think you're going?
Well, I had a couple ideas. Why?
Let's hear it.
Where am I not going?
Where is your life going?
My life is... actually, my life is good in spite of all of the crazy forces among us, you know, at this point in life. You know, I feel pretty good. And really, it's being able to help other people. You know, it's a juice for me. It's just like, you know.
Now, you're a man who plays music, leads sometimes services. Do you want to sign in and say exactly who you are?
No.
There we have it. Well, I see you're hauling away. It looks like a speaker and a...
I'm John Martin.
Of course. Who else would you be?
Yeah. Hey, you know, I mean...
You'll be, of course, coming to the protest on Thursday to make sure that everybody is, I don't know, express your views, give your thoughts.
I actually might pass by. Is that Thursday in the afternoon?
Thursday at 4, yeah.
4, yeah, okay.
Post office.
And it's located?
In front of the main post office.
Oh, okay. Amen.
Yes.
I may dress in an appropriate uniform or something.
Indeed. Well, you can wear a mailman's outfit and maybe you can get past the fence. You never can tell.
Yeah, that's right. No, I am thrilled about MHK, and it's funny.
Did they come today to talk? I wasn't.
That was MHK today.
I missed that.
So every
said of any note.
Here? So it's the second week for us. You go 2 weeks, and then MHK comes into us. And what's so exciting about it is
second Monday of the month.
Yeah, that's right. So you get about typically 5, 6, 7, 8 people who are going to speak. And these people, we've all gone through it. In the beginning, they were, very subdued and maybe not particularly lucid, or it didn't have much to say. And I've been doing this now for maybe 20 years, something like that.
Calvary Episcopal?
Here, yeah. And now you sit down and you go, oh, my God, that person. All those people that I saw right now have all magnificently progressed through life. They actually make an awful lot of us look silly because they know what they're doing. You know what I mean? They're getting to the point where, well, wait a minute, I know why I'm doing this, So... it's just very exciting to see people progress. Today there was about 4 of them that had pretty good start on sobriety, 12, 20 years, something like that. And Joe's brother, Nick, who is very much like a Robin Williams, tremendous sense of humor, can imagine anything in the world.
He cracked jokes, did he?
And paint it in the air for you, yeah.
Really?
But at the same time, a person who, in his whole life has been probably massively attention deficit, high speed material coming out that you can't understand. All that is just floated away. He was as lucid as he can be in there, and talking to other people that had similar issues. And
you should record this and we can play it on the air if they agree.
Sure, yeah.
Because I often don't get to those earlier sessions, but if you have a way of recording it,
sure.
Ask them if it's okay. They're giving public speeches, so it might be
especially
good.
Especially if they don't have to give their names, they're probably a little more comfortable that way.
They don't have to do that.
But yeah, I'm telling you, for all the things we do, that's the most worthwhile.
Now, Calvary has been doing this meal, are you saying for 20 years, or you're talking about you've been around for 20 years generally here? I mean, I wasn't aware they've been doing this since the 90s.
The MHCAN hasn't lasted that long.
Has Calvary been doing this kind of open meal every Monday since the 90s or not?
Let's see. Well, no. 2000, about 2001 or 2, that's when I got here.
So it was Joel Miller, he was the pastor at that time.
And he was really a big founder of all this. He was the one that climbed up in front of a pretty rowdy-looking group and said, the first thing we're going to do is become a community. And I thought it was nuts. and there is one.
He was successful. He's been back, and he's been occasionally kind of saying hello.
Yeah, he does. He drops in, and I appreciate that. He's really the father of a lot of that stuff that went on,
Has your role in any of this changed over the last 20 years?
Yeah, I play more music, and it's fun for me. And, for instance, you look great. And I should have given you a place to play. This is the cover right here.
The infamous stream catcher here.
Yes, yeah, look at this. So that's about it for right now. But and this is Nick right behind you, who's one of the guys who was talking. So anyway.
And we've been talking with
Yes, we have been talking with John Martin.
Of course, who else? Thank you, John.
Hey, good to see you.
All right, Dreamcatcher, a report from you?
Yes. I've had a serious bruised rib this week, so I've been really laying low trying to get it to heal, and I think it's on the mend.
That's good.
I had an old pleurisy thing going when I was...
What is pleurisy?
Pleura is the tissue that holds your lung to the rib cage, so when your diaphragm moves, it sucks air in.
Huh.
By expanding your lung rib cage, and the pleura. It's a delamination of the pleura when you bang a lot, when you have a lot of impact on your belly, on a boogie board, you know, crashing through waves. So every breath has been very painful.
Well, I don't want you to have to breathe and talk a lot now, unless you want to.
I do. I like pain sometimes.
Okay.
Especially when I want to say thank you again. And some contributions have been made for some of my paintings. I'm doing really well. I try to get at least one or two done a day of my flaming feathers or whatever I do. And I need a plug-in drill and some drill bits and a hair dryer so I can dry my paintings, and a drill so I can put my trailer a little bit better together.
This is Huff Want Ads. Just contact Huff at 423-4833 and say, I've got the goods for Dreamcatcher, and I will hook you up with that dreamy guy.
Thank you very much. Yeah, if you even get the stuff and then give it to me, because you know how to find me better than anybody else can. So.
Well, I tend to run into you, that's for sure.
Yes, that's.
I have no idea where you are. You're still living in Watsonville, yes?
Yes, but
you've
like
also
it.
Spent a lot of time here. You've been camping illegally.
Yes, I have. I've been having a very nice vacation for once in my life.
Well, it's getting colder out there. I understand.
No, my hands are freezing. I'm about ready to go home.
And you got pleurisy.
Well, I mean, I'm okay now, I guess. Yeah, I was just rolled over on the edge of a little brick thing I was sitting on, and I felt my left rib go pop. Yeah, that kind of surprised me. Getting old, but I'm still good. Maybe getting better at something. I don't know yet.
You got your guitar on your back?
Yeah, my girlfriend. I got new strings. That's what I did with one of the $20 bills that was given to me. I was just sitting there by the Orthodox Church, and this lady says, I just want to give you something. Can I give you this? I go, sure. And I just put it away. And I said, would you like a painting? She goes, no, I'll just give it to somebody else. I go, at least you're honest.
All right, painter man. I will go back and observe your feather painting, which I have in my bedroom, I'd like to point out.
Thank you. It's not on the back of the bathroom door?
That might have one there, too. I think I've gotten more than one from you at different times.
Good. I got more.
We've been listening to...
The Dreamcatcher.
Anything else?
I need a little amplifier, like a little mini cube, so I can be a one-man band.
Well, you heard it here. Thank you, Dreamcatcher.
All righty.
Bye-bye.
So you've grown tired of your parents always hanging around. Now they spoil your children, and having grandparents is out. Yes, and they raised you well, but you wish to hell that they'd go away, so you wouldn't have to pay for their food. Forget all the years when they paid for you. Send your mother to Shady Acres. Send your father to Shady Acres. We'll take good care of them. You won't be aware of them. Send them to Shady Acres. Well, if one of them's dead, don't worry your head. We have a matchmaker. They can't sit down and kvetch on the redstone steps while watching Green Acres. Yes, if you don't want to visit, well, there's no requisite. We have foster sons and daughters to help all our borders. Stop feeling blue. Keep the checks coming and we won't bother you. Send your mother to Shady Acres. Send venture further to shady acres. We'll take good care of them. You won't be aware of them. Send them to shady acres. Yes, here it's so peaceful. They die while they're sleeping. Yes, right in their beds. Now there's no need for worry. We have our own mortuary and a beautiful cemetery. Yes, we are good people who care for the feeble. We've devoted our lives to the husbands and wives who don't want their fathers around to be bothered. So send them where respectable and tax deductible. Send your mother to shady acres. Send your father to shady acres. We'll take good care of them because we love them. Send them to shady acres.
And that was a selection from The Best of Broadside, 1962 through 1988. Anthems of the American Underground from the pages of Broadside Magazine. And the name of that song, by sung by Janice Ian, Shady Acres. And now some encouraging words, or at least some educational words, from the HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting that we had on Wednesday. Well, these folks speak for themselves, so here they are.
At the HUF meeting, it's the 14th of November around noon. I'm talking with
Greg.
And Greg, you're a man who's been camping on the beaches, even having a tent up during the day.
We've actually been keeping up day, night, yep.
And for how long have you been doing this?
In the tent, me personally, just the past week. But there have been tents up for about 2 or 3 weeks, just a few.
And you mentioned before, as a previous, a week ago, that one of the reasons you came to that meeting was rangers came and dispersed you and ticketed you when you were near Cowles Beach. That might have been connected, by the way, with Cowles Beach agenda item that came up last night at City Council, interestingly enough. Or it was actually kind of a semi-agenda item. But and we talked about strategies for recovering people once they've scattered from protests, campground areas that they themselves have set up, because one of the problems you mentioned is people, not only does their stuff get taken or they have to run away with whatever they can get, but they can't really, they lose their sense of community and they can't really get back together easily. And an idea would be, how can we establish a relocation point? But since then, you say you've moved from the Cowell Beach to the other side of the wharf, the main beach, which, by the way, Cynthia Matthews and David Terrazas apparently want to establish curfews on, so that there'll be other laws other than the camping ban that they can go after people with, because Cowell Beach it's a closed beach with a curfew after a certain time, but if they come after you in the morning, there's no curfew, and so the tickets they gave you are probably BS, unless there's signs that say it's closed until a certain time. But what time did you get those tickets, by the way?
I didn't get any tickets out on the steps on the Cowell Beach side.
But
they
didn't?
Just gave us some other people nearby had not camping tickets potential, but they had other infractions that they just let them get away with. But they just said, "You're getting off easy. Just leave after. Get your stuff out of here within 2 hours."
Which the proper reply is, leave me alone, you're getting off easy, I won't be filing complaints about your harassment because you have no basis for even talking to me unless I want to be talked to, because there's no legal violation during the day unless they actually could find, maybe there's an open container or some bullshit like that. But being in that spot with a tent is no longer a crime, because the camping board, unless they can show they've got adequate shelter, which they never have, they never will have, or at least isn't likely in the near future. So Apparently now, however, they aren't even telling you to leave. This is what you were saying. And they, when they come across you in a tent?
Right. They actually came by, well, 3 days ago, there was a ranger, and I overheard him talking to a resident who was complaining about all the tents out there. And she said it's, I can't remember what she said, but she was not happy with them. And he'd said, well, you can thank the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And I suppose he's referring to the Boise decision. And but he did mention that they were going to be that they were tasked with their by their superiors to or somebody to really keep an eye on us out there and look for any other infractions and be really sticklers about those. And somebody did get a ticket by that ranger for having there was an unopened single can of beer that had he was just sitting there in the sand and it had fallen out.
You're allowed to have an unopened can of beer.
He gave him a ticket for alcohol on the beach, even though it was...
I guess that's illegal.
But it seems odd because what if somebody buys some beer and they keep it unopened because they're going somewhere else, and if they want to sit down for 15 minutes and watch the sunset and then they want to come back?
See, the ordinance he's using is not the open container ordinance. He's using the no alcohol on the beach, which means open or unopened.
Okay.
So therefore, the answer is... Take it, you know, you shouldn't be here. You shouldn't have come onto the beach with this.
Right.
That's their pretext. But what's your sense of the people in your camp group and maybe in other tent groups, that are they actually causing any kind of litter, trash, poo-poo and pee-pee, harassing of people, any kind of real problems?
No, not out on the beach. The tents, we kind of self-police, and we've been discussing this, just, and we like the beach. We love the beach, so we don't like to litter. And, you know, so there's two things. Number one, we just, out of principle, don't like to litter, and like we pick up litter. Number two, we want to keep low profile and not give any reasons to have police come out. And that's why the 2 days ago, the ranger had come out and stopped by each tent and was actually thanking people. And, you know, he came up and thanked me for keeping neat and tidy around my tent. And
name of the ranger?
I can't remember. I wish I had because he was very polite. And I got out of the tent and we stood and talked for a little while. And he'd mentioned that, you know, as long as he'd doesn't see any problem with it, and I don't know if, you know, he didn't have any official statement regarding legality of staying on the beach like that, but just said he appreciated our situation and just keep up, you know, the standards that we were. And
so you've been there for a week now, had those tents up?
Yeah.
How many
tents? Let's see, I'd say eight or nine. On our side now, yeah,
right near the boardwalk.
Yeah, it's right on the other side of the wharf. Some tents are right near the wharf. Others are. I'm kind of out in the middle by the volleyball courts.
Any reported hassles from boardwalk security thugs?
No, zero.
Are they still around policing?
Yeah. If you're, I don't know if they come that far down, but I know that people do get. People have come back and they're like, "Oh, I've got a 24-hour
stay away,
or however many days, depending on whatever they did." I'm not sure.
Are they getting the stay away?
That's if they're right down by the actual.
They're on the boardwalk property.
Yes. Yeah.
I'd heard in the past the boardwalk thinks it owns some of the beach, but I'm not sure what the story is with that. Do any of these rangers ever look into people's tents, or do they respect the privacy of the tents?
So far, as far as I know, they've respected the privacy. I don't know of anything yet. And news travels fast amongst us. They'll cruise around just out of the blue. Just on foot, so you don't hear the vehicles. Sometimes they'll come on the vehicles. A couple times, actual police on ATVs have come out, but it seemed like they were targeting that they were actually looking for something. They didn't seem random.
Any police action at night or ranger action at night?
No, not that I've seen. Not that I've seen.
How long have you been camping out yourself?
Camping out?
Living outside.
Oh, geez. Off and on for quite a while, for months, but off and on for years.
In Santa Cruz?
Santa Cruz, but also Monterey and Salinas.
How long in Santa Cruz?
Santa Cruz since May or June.
And have you noticed in May and June, what areas were you... Give me a sense of what areas you were camping in. Were you using a tent? And what was the impact, if any, of police and ranger activity?
I wasn't usually using a tent, maybe just a tarp, or sometimes I would be in somebody else's tent. But I know over at Seabright Beach, people were staying the night longer, and then all of a sudden rangers started really coming along there. They would sometimes come along shortly before the fires were supposed to be put out at 9 or 10, and but then they'd be gone. But then in the morning, they'd come and ask us, you know, if we'd spent the night there, and I'd just peek up out of my sleeping bag and say, no, I just got here a little bit ago, and just because it was
just,
by that time...
swam in from Hawaii.
And they said that they were going to be cracking down a little bit more on...
cracking down with non-existent laws, yeah.
At that time, that was prior to the Boise decision, so I'm not sure what mm-hmm. what law, but they said they would take it.
And these were Capitola cops or deputies?
No, they were rangers.
State or city?
I don't know. I don't know.
All right, man. Go ahead.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure what type of rangers. I didn't look at. Came in the white truck, and I didn't see if. Didn't think about that.
What's the situation with hard drug use? And the new privacy in the tents where people can theoretically shoot up if they wish.
Right. I presume all sorts of things are happening. Sometimes I'm just reading a 1,500-page book on Henry Kissinger in the White House.
That's a big mistake.
I know. I get hassled by my friends more doing that than they get hassled for doing hard drugs.
How's the community there?
The community?
I mean, is there much support from each other?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's great, usually. But... depends on, you know, if people have been drinking excessively, you know, personalities change, and that's one thing that happens. I mean, it can happen in any community, but when you're in an open community where there is no real privacy, you know every little thing. When somebody decides to be loud, you hear it.
I mean, do people respond to each other's concerns, like, I'm trying to sleep, shut up?
Or not? Occasionally. We're just used to, you know, I'm close enough to the waves that the ocean waves, sometimes I actually feel like telling the ocean waves to...
Is there any nude bathing going on?
Nude bathing? Just obnoxiousness, just running into the ocean, something like that.
Now, where do people go poo-poo and pee-pee? What's going on here? Do you go poo-poo and bury it in the sand, like some doggies or what?
Usually... If I try to time it with the bathrooms being open and some, but I mean, yeah, you. I just try to. 7 or 8. Yeah, it is, because it depends if you wake up and. Yeah. And
now, are the bathrooms the private bathrooms the boardwalk? Or are you talking about city bathrooms?
The city bathrooms, the one over by the hotel on Cowles, and then the ones that are by Ideal Cafe, the public bathrooms there.
Is there hot water provided?
No. And that's,
are there showers?
There's the outdoor shower, but that gets turned off at night. But it's just cold water. But it would be nice to have hot water sometime, because if you get cuts in your hand, my friend had a bad infection in his hand. If he could have just soaked it in some hot water, you know, it would have really been of help. And just to have clean hands, it helps to have hot water besides soap. And then the dryers, the blow hand dryers, are ice cold in the morning, so that's always fun when your hands are already cold.
It makes a man of you, son.
yeah. I like to, it just brings out the Viking in me. But at times you just get bedraggled and spiritually down as well, and emotionally just downtrodden, and it's nice to have just the slightest creature comforts, and you don't feel like being a Viking all the time.
Anybody have any questions for Greg that have come up in the course of this narrative that anybody wants to ask?
Are there couples?
Yes, there are. There are couples. Yeah, and that's nice. And you know, they.
Gay couples or straight couples?
I don't know. I mean, there could be gay couples out there. I don't know of any right in that spot.
Are there regular church services?
Are there church services? No, not regular church services. You know, I'll show people some yoga, or I'll read out of the Bible, or, you know, some people have actually asked.
What about the book of Henry Kissinger?
People are they're just appalled. Well, just the size of the book.
He is war criminal, you know.
Because somebody wanted me to bring them a beer, and this one day I brought them the book instead, and I said, here's that book on Kissinger you guys wanted and asked me to go get, and they just, their jaws dropped, and they stared at me for about 30 seconds, and I said, no, I'm just kidding.
They said, here, you can have the beer. You need the beer.
Right.
So Laura had a question about dogs.
There are dogs that stay up on the, what we call upstairs or on the upper deck, you know, up on the actual, where the benches are.
Is it part of the boardwalk? Or?
I don't know what you'd call it, but it's just down between, it's between the public bathrooms and the boardwalk, but it's that long, you know, it's 6 feet up off the beach, off the sand itself, and it's got the benches. So people stay up there a lot.
And hassled by the security guards from the boardwalk?
Not down there. I don't know how far they'd have to go to get to encroach on that. And but there are some dogs up there.
So and, where do they get the stayaways from the security guards?
I think right out down by the boardwalk. I'm not sure. I haven't asked. I just always
people
hear.
People may have tried to use the bathrooms in the boardwalk too.
It could be. Yeah.
I'm speculating. I have no idea.
Yeah. I'm not sure. There's one of the few payphones is down by Gate 6, inside of Gate 6. So when they close those, you can't use it. But if you're there, you're definitely on boardwalk property. The other payphone, that's the only one that's not by downtown, because the one by Las Palmas restaurant doesn't work. So in terms of having communication ability.
Well, you can always go to Davenport. They actually have phone booths in Davenport.
Oh, really? Okay. I'll get
80s
right
retro.
I'll have to get some new shoelaces, though, so I can walk all the way up there and get back.
Luxury items. You're really demanding everything, aren't you?
Yeah.
You got a tent. What more do you want?
Right. Well, it's not even my tent. I'm just borrowing it from a friend. And it becomes a storage facility during the day, because all my friends that don't want some stuff stolen will have it in there. So it's almost filled to the roof with people's sleeping bags. But having stuff in a safe spot is just essential. And having it out of sight is so much better than having it sitting
What's
around.
What's the theft situation there?
If you turn your back, things disappear quite rapidly. If it's in our zone, usually people kind of know that one of us might be watching, and people won't grab it. But you never know. And it's just homeless upon homeless theft. You know, it's just stealing from ourselves. Yeah, which is unfortunate. Because
can you ask how your friend is doing?
She's referring to a friend of mine that I'd been downtown with, and he's in his 70s, and he's got, you know, he walks with a cane, but he got robbed one night. I didn't know where he was at. I was watching his stuff, so I stayed for 30 hours watching his stuff laying on the sidewalk, and finally I just said, I can't wait anymore, and then in the meantime I'd gone to the bathroom, so most of his stuff was stolen that I'd been watching for 30 hours. So
how long were you in the bathroom?
5 minutes. I just ran down. I had to run down to the porta potty.
What time of day?
After being there all night, it was about 9:30 in the morning, and I was hoping that he had come back and taken it. So I didn't see him for 2 days until Laura was driving me to go out to Emmeline, and we stopped by we were going to the printers on the way to print the flyers, and I saw him, and so she ended up letting him get a ride with me out there to Emmeline too, because he needed to do the same thing, but he was exhausted. I mean, he could not stay awake. He'd been in the hospital for 2 days. He was bleeding, and, you know, and I mean, he didn't bleed in your car.
He joined your camp, or?
He likes to stay downtown. I mean, he doesn't get, he wouldn't be able to walk around on the sand like that. So he ended up going back downtown. I'm not sure. Somebody, a friend of mine, got him there somehow and gave him some blankets, because blankets and a jacket, because he didn't have anything after he came out of the hospital. So I've seen him. He's a survivor, but he doesn't complain. But I'm sure it hasn't been easy, because all of his stuff was stolen, and he's beat up and bruised and cut, and I don't know. I need to check on him. But that's another thing. It's just the inability to communicate without having phones or phone chargers.
We need a switchboard. Well, we got cell phones now, but I need chargers, as you're saying.
Yeah.
Laura, do you have any follow-up questions on this issue? Greg number two, I should say, or Greg number one, or we got two Gregs here.
I was saying Beach Greg. Beach Greg. He likes that.
Okay. Yeah, I'll be Beach
so,
Greg.
So, Greg, what, any questions for Beach Greg? We'll get back to your other thought in a moment. So, what about women and children in the tents? Anything? Anything happening there? If you wish to say, I mean, don't put anybody's, you know, at risk. But feel free to say what you need to.
No, there's no children out there right now. I know people that have kids that are in other tent areas.
There's reports. Any reports of them being left alone, being harassed, being partially left alone?
No. The kids, you mean? No.
Well, just the people in the tents, including the families.
No. Everything, so far, you know, occasionally somebody will just go, like the other day, some guy misinterpreted something, or somebody, we didn't know who he was, but he wouldn't go away from this one woman's tent, and somebody said something to him, and so he pulled out pepper spray and attacked whoever was saying something to him. And, I just put a tarp, you know, went after the guy with the tarp, and then so he was covered. And then somebody else, we had some milk, so we took the other guy. And couldn't remember what to do with tear gas or pepper spray in people's eyes. So the woman and her boyfriend, they ended up helping him up to, because he couldn't see. You know, he was on the ground, having trouble breathing. So we got him up to the bathrooms and flushed his eyes and put some milk in his eyes. And
any help from para, you know, ambulance people?
No, we didn't. It wasn't. Mm-hmm. We knew basically it was just a matter of time, unless he had some breathing difficulties. It was just kind of random.
You're going to be finding out, looking for contacts among some of these campsites? At least your own, from phone numbers and things?
It's so hard to... I don't know. I've been in situations where most of us had cell phones, and it was always, you know, hard to keep them charged. You know, power outlets are so scarce. But in this current situation, it's just hardly anybody has cell phones. Everybody's always asking, "Is your cell phone charged? Can I make a call?" And people walk around for half a day just to be able to make an important phone call. To check on important, you know, just personal business, or just to make a quick call. It's really hard to do that.
That's one thing that the River Street Campground Boneyard Barbed Wire Camp is closing day after tomorrow, or part of it, had. They had places you could charge your phones.
Yeah, that's a huge, huge deal.
What about the library? Do they allow you to charge there?
Yeah, the best thing if somebody can afford it is buy, have a portable charger that you charge at the library at the same time as you're charging your phone, and then you've got reserve. And then, but then people are just dying to borrow your charger if they know you have that.
Charge a buck and a half a call.
That could be
moneymaker.
That could be.
How are tourists and people passing by reacting to these camps and tents?
It's funny. I see some families. They just sit there down, put their picnic blanket down right amongst us, we definitely look at if there's little kids around or if there's kids. We're always like, there's a kid. You know, just so people don't swear as much and don't do anything blatantly
Take that needle into the tent, buddy.
We kind of self-police on that just because that's going to draw attention. There's places you can do things that...
Any overdose problems there? Did you wish to say?
No, not yet, luckily. I always worry about that. There have been a few needles that I've seen. Not many, but...
Do you have a Sharps container you can use?
No, I don't. I'd like to get one just because I don't...
Got one in the car if you want it.
I don't shoot, but...
Come with me afterward, I'll give you
that. Because I see them, and it's just... I've found them, and I hate even just if I see a cap next to it, I hate putting the cap on just because, you could slip and...
You need one at the beach, too.
Has there been any... This is probably a stupid question, but has there been any talk about... a place where nurses can supervise people shooting up, or is that like way...
There was a harm reduction discussion by somebody yesterday at the city council during oral communications. Remember that, Gloria?
Yes.
And, actually two people spoke. One was Jennifer Langdon, who was previously employed at the campground. And the other is Denise Elric, who is... a person who often, occasionally responds to trolls on the Discus Sentinel comments section. She was part of Needle Exchange and a defender of Needle Exchange. And they spoke about the need for Needle Exchange. I don't know if they talk about injection centers. We've got a bunch of chicken shit people who are in the more, much as I like often what she says, because I think she does speak very articulately, but... I don't know that they've come out. Maybe they have for injection centers, such as was proposed in San Francisco, supposedly about to open in the summer, but I think delayed by Mayor Breed out of her, nervousness about it. I don't think there are any above-ground needle injection centers open yet in this country. There are in Vancouver.
Yeah.
And remember, Needle Exchange began here surreptitiously. It began under Sub Rosa, just like marijuana distribution centers did, and just like camping does. People do what they need to do, the sensible thing, and the authorities catch up after having beaten the shit out of the people who led the way. That's usually the way that it works, or that's sometimes the way it works.
Well, that's the historical observation across...
It's the hysterical observation as well.
That's the march of history.
Ursula?
Where did you get your red box?
My red box? Well, it's actually a small... I don't remember where it came.
There was a meeting image can, and a lot of people were set up in this building. We went to it. I can't remember what it's called. And they were giving away the Sharps containers.
These are very small Sharps containers. They aren't big ones.
The little ones.
Little black box.
If we could get a bunch of them, then
Does anybody want to go research that and see where they can be gotten?
Emily?
Can anyone go and specifically find out the relevant people involved to make a request for a number of them so that they can be distributed among camps? Because that's what we really need to do. Mm-hmm. Take Back Santa Cruz should be on this, but they're a bunch of assholes. Sorry, Take Back Santa Cruz.
I got evidence that there was, I got oral testimony that there was availability for large Sharps containers at Emmeline. And also,
so does anybody want to volunteer to go do this, is my question. It's okay. Maybe something next time. Some
resource for getting it.
Sorry? Maybe. I don't know.
Okay, because I have no idea.
Yeah. Do you want to contact me later? I can.
Okay.
I don't know who else would know. So Laura and Ursula might look into that. So we've been talking with Greg. And you'll be at this protest tomorrow, probably.
Absolutely.
Will you have your tent with you? Are you going to leave your tent unattended? What's your story?
I don't know. I'll probably leave it.
Are you going to put it in 24-hour storage with Brent Adams?
I could do that, but I'll probably just have the neighbors watch it.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Anything you want to add that we haven't covered?
No, not at the present.
Okay. You're from Berkeley. You come pretty regularly to these Huff meetings, and you're wearing a mask. Does that mean that you're afraid you're about to be arrested? And who is this man with a bicycle? Who seems? I think I know who he is, actually. That's another story. Yeah. So James, you're from Berkeley. What's up there?
So the tomorrow there's a big rally on campus to, and we're going to have a rally to save People's Park at noon at Mario Savio steps.
And by the time we play this on, perhaps on Thursday night, because I think that's what we're probably going to do, that will have already come and gone. Is this going to be a? Tell me more about this rally that by the time we play this has happened.
I don't know more about it. I just know that the and at 7 o'clock there's something at Eshelin Hall relating to People's Park. The UC Regents are the biggest criminals in California. They're the heads of PG&E and the oil companies. It was in the Daily Kel a month ago where they investing $250 million in a Regents business, and it's a risky business. And I met a woman who retired from the chancellor's office, and she said, we told Capital Projects they wouldn't get the $500 million after they kicked out the tree sitters to build on that site and the football stadium. She says, we told them they wouldn't get the money, and they spent the money anyway.
So what is the threat to People's Park these days?
Well, the university has already hired a construction firm to build on the park. They act like it's a done deal. They're going to charge $3,600 for two people in a one-room, two people, that's $1,800 each. They say we're going to house homeless students.
Sounds like Santa Cruz.
And I think if the homeless students can't afford $1,800 now, they're not going to afford $1,800 once they, if they ever were able to, and they're not going to be able to, but if they were able to destroy People's Park, I don't think the homeless students are going to be afford to live there. And if they really wanted to help us homeless students or us homeless people at all, they'd let us sleep in the park now.
How long have people been banned from sleeping in People's Park, which is, by the way, a large block area that's about four blocks from the University of California along Telegraph Avenue and was a swampy area throughout the late 60s when the university destroyed low-income housing there and then put nothing in its place, and it was occupied by the community and turned into a park and has been held as a park ever since in kind of joint ownership by both the city and the university. But the university has been, you know, itching to take it away. They built sports courts there, some of which were torn out by the community in the early 90s. But it seems like there, and then they were deforested the area a couple years ago. There's still some trees there, but not the number that were. And they've made it illegal to be there at night, I believe. Is that right?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think at least you're not allowed to sleep there. Does anybody know?
I've camped there on occasion and not been bothered because I got lucky.
Uh-huh. But is there any posted signs saying no being there at night, no camping?
Your Honor, I did not happen to see the sign as I was stumbling down the path.
Well, get up there and find out, Mitch, for heaven's sakes. It's an informational situation going on here.
I was stumbling in the dark, Your Honor, and frankly...
Get a flashlight.
I did not have a...
What are you, a Cro-Magnon?
I did not even have a helmet. I should have been...
But you have that hat. That's a very nice looking hat.
Given that I'm in the mine shaft of life, I should have a miner's hard hat with a big lamp on it.
Right.
And I don't even have a canary, Your Honor.
You considered letting Jesus be your light?
Davidian Psalms. God bless the Davidian Psalms. Mm. Psalm 23.
Indeed. Well, we'll leave this religious moment. Anything else happening?
Oh, and not to change the subject any from humor.
Certainly.
I was on campus, and I was putting one finger up on one hand and two fingers up on the other hand like a victory sign. Meaning, and the cop walks up to me, and he says, what does that mean? And I'm flashing my middle finger up and down like a victory sign. I says, I need a free ticket. He says, you can't solicit on campus. So I walked over to the first tech kiosk where it says will call, and they said, what's your name? And I said, William Call. And they start looking, and I say, no, I'm just kidding. And they laugh, and the cop says, is he bothering you? And they say, no. So the cop follows me to the next kiosk, and they say, what's your name? And I said, Will Call. And they start looking through Will Call for my name, and I say, no, I'm just kidding. And they laugh, and the cop says, is he bothering you? And I said, no.
They say no.
So then I went to the last kiosk, and they said, what's your name? And I said...
This is like the Three Mama Bears.
I said...
There should be a punchline at the end of this.
This may not be a Shaggy Dog story.
Said, what's your name? And I said, Will Cal. So they start looking. I say, come on, my name's on every one. There's a blue and gold stamp. They start looking. I say, no, I'm just kidding. And they laugh.
Pulled out a gun and shot you. No.
And the cop says, is he bothering you? And I said, no. So the cop didn't know I had a ticket. Now, Matt was standing right next to me.
That's your colleague.
The cop came up to me. He looks like one of the nice, beautiful Berkeley scalpers. But they never bothered me before Matt stood next to me while I'm trying to get him a ticket. And the cop didn't know I had a ticket. So Matt agreed that I would go in if I only got one ticket. So the cop didn't know I had a ticket. So then I scamper.
Ticket to what? I should say.
To the basketball game. So the cop didn't know I had a ticket. So I scamper up the ramp. I walk in.